Okay, now of course people will say, I can't read this. I think that by the end of the conference, when I think I have two talks, you probably can read it. If you get accustomed to it. Otherwise, you can also see differently. 50% of the talks is in Polish, and then I can't read the... Okay, before we move on to OpenType, let's take a quick look at what happens in traditional texts. It all started with bitmap fonts, fonts made out of pixels. Actually, the font that you see here is one of those bitmap fonts. We can print it in the outline, but traditionally you could only render it as bitmap. That's why probably nobody ever used it. You can recognize bitmap fonts, at least when you process a text file, by funny names with suffixes like PK and then some kind of number behind it showing up on your terminal. Then there are the what I call traditional outline fonts, the type 1 fonts, for instance. There is an example of that, and you can recognize them by a suffix PFB. Two type fonts, open type fonts, they can be used in traditional text, but it's a bit cumbersome. So sometimes when you do a text reading, you can see that such fonts are included, but they are basically still treated as a kind of traditional font. In the worst case, think about Chinese and whatever, you have to split these big fonts that you have into smaller fonts, into the smaller traditional PFB fonts that we have, in order to be able to use them. Then there is the fifth category of files, that is the TFM files, probably everybody knows them. And they have some information about what is in the font. They don't have really font information in the sense of how glyphs, etc. should be drawn. They just keep the metadata, some kerning and ligature information. Then there can be virtual fonts. Anybody who uses languages other than English probably has ran into those. Virtual fonts, they combine aspects of all kinds of other fonts into one font. There can be AFM files on your system. AFM files often come with fonts that you buy. I don't know how many people buy fonts here, but most fonts I use are bought fonts. And you can use these AFM files to create text metric files. And of course, you need, in order to go from, let's say, a subset of lists you have selected to the real thing, you have encoding files you can recognize by the enc suffix. Another type of files that you can find are map files. Map files connect this whole mess. And there are only a few people who know how to make them and use them. And then finally you need text files that define these fonts that somehow make all these different files and content of these files into something that you can use in your text file. Now, before I go on, probably most people know this, so that's why I'm going over it a bit fast. How many files are this? Let's take AFM files. Yeah, there are some 1800 AFM files on your system. Take TFM files. Mm-hmm. 10,000 TFM files on your system. And believe me, most of them are kind of redundant. It means that you say you buy a font and you want to use it in different circumstances. You want to typeset in Polish or you want to typeset in German or whatever. Often you need slightly different encodings. And that means additional files and, well, everything quickly multiplies by 3 or 4 given the previous mentioned file types. Okay, so that's the bad news, but the good thing is that now we have a few new cool tech engines, and one of them is CTech and the other one is LuaTech, and they can handle the large fonts that have been around actually for quite a while, but usually you have to split them up or use only pieces of them. This is actually two things happening to the technology. These engines also call Unicode. And somehow Unicode is associated with big fonts and having many glyphs and many things out there. So these two technologies will make our life much more easy. And so they have Unicode, they naturally deal with open type fonts. And the nice thing about open type fonts is there's only one file per, well, Adam probably knows the right term for it. How do you call an individual thingy of one of those? If you buy four fonts, how do you call the one thing?
One style.
The style. Okay. So there's one file per style. As you can see here, I have only 22 TTF. And slightly more here. 81 OTF files here. These are, for instance, Terracotta fonts. And, well, you probably know the right numbers, but this is the times variant. These are four fonts. But the AFM, TFM, PFB, whatever collection that's meant for the traditional ones, that meant how many? Times four? Probably 20 times four. Number of fonts. So the old system just really started to explode into something unmanageable. So there's only one file per style. And there are no longer files spread all over the place. One of the side effects of the many different file types is that in the tech trees they were normally spread all over the place. Personally, I no longer do that thing. If I use, let's say, one of the modern techs, I just put them all in one place and forget about distributing them. I mainly talk about some aspects of OpenType in general, but sometimes I will mention some context aspects. In context, we even, especially if you talk about LuaTeX, we even treat the traditional font, because you still have a lot of traditional fonts if you switch to another engine on your machine. We even treat them as white fonts, because we just map them into a sort of pseudo Unicode space. So users there even don't see the other things. That means that there is still one thing left, and that is, I think probably true for LuaTeX as well as TTeX, if you use MARS, you still need these special TFM files that have some MARS metric information. But even that will go away in the future, because we have the TerraGaia MARS project, which hopefully will give us open type MARS fonts, and then we can kick out even more of the old fonts. Another nice thing is that, and this is again more related to LuaTeX, that we can build virtual fonts at runtime, so we can even combine these open type and missing pieces in open type. If you want, what you actually see here is a virtual font. Runtime generated metapose virtual font with 10 inches per click. The nice thing about that technology, and I especially added this for you, is that we then also have all these characters that you always complain about in the. But there's one thing remaining, that is, whatever font you buy, the naming is always a mess. I don't know why they can't get it right. The file names are a mess, they are inconsistent, they are usually upper and lower case, in the same font, doesn't matter, the names in the fonts are usually a mess or abbreviated mess or whatever. So, that part of the whole will not quickly change. But anyhow, overall, I think that the future, if you look at OpenType, looks quite promising. Many files are gone, a few files are back. Okay, now I will have a few, let's say, observations based on the fact that we are talking about open type fonts. This is the dangerous part of this talk. Okay, let's say there's an open type format, and the format is defined in an open way, because it has, well, it's called open type, yeah? And everybody can read it, and it's completely clear what's in this specification. Well, we come to that. I'm just saying what the name OpenType suggests.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think I told you, open means it's extensible. It's
yes,
like
we come to those issues.
Of
yeah,
course,
okay.
it was an advertisement. It didn't mean
no,
open specification in the beginning. It was completely
clear. I know that now you basically took away my final conclusion. Yeah,
yeah.
That okay, we will come to that later.
Unstable?
No, forget about it. The format is, I'm just saying here, what if I'm a naive user, I'm looking at this, yeah, I think OpenPipe, yeah, what do I think? Format is open in the sense that one can add additional features, yeah, that would be a nice thing. So there are no limits, and limits can be shifted. That would be, there's no community responsible for the whole thing, and specification will evolve and things like that. And commercial objectives don't interfere or lead to conflicts. Now this would be an ideal world for a real, nice, open font format, isn't it? Now in practice, I think none of this is true. So let's take a quick look at this at what we are dealing with actually. The standards. Most documentation of the standard can be found at the Microsoft site. I think if you go to the Adobe site, you eventually click and point back to the Microsoft site, and there you'll find most information.
Parts are on the Adobe site, like the CFF.
Yeah, some of the
some PDFs that are on the Adobe site, but yeah. Most of the stuff is at the Microsoft site.
The description in general of what are features and what are on the Microsoft site. There is a formal specification. And it's an easy specification. Well, and as with any easy specification, it's horrible expensive. So probably nobody in the room except for you has it.
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, that says something. Who has a specification?
I think so.
I do. I do. No. We know. It takes a while to assemble a proper printable description. If people are interested, I have somehow assembled all these documents using this feature vector to turn it into PDF, and I have now two files with all the things that I think are more or less there. Okay, but finally, that's the material you have to work with. There are a couple of tools available that you can use to add features, which we will explain later, to fonts. So basically there are only a few tools available that you can use to make an open type font. And well, I think it's pretty safe to say that they're incomplete. It's also safe to say that they come from the two main parties who are involved in open type, so they are not really tuned at the mass, but more at certain users and certain tools. And this all opens a world of of trial and error. And just as a side note, one of the reasons for doing this talk is that, as some of you may know, that in the LuaTeX project, one of the driving forces behind it is Oriental Tech, that it is, and he is fighting this, how to make a good proper Arab font fight. And the problem is there are no specs, there are no real tools. If you make something, you have to test it in each tool to make sure that it works in each tool, etc., etc. And that's why I think you can safely say, if you see the mail threads that are associated with that, it is really a world of trial and error out there. And I think probably the you folks can confirm part of that, because we had quite some discussions about adding even some simple things like ligatures to it, or assigning file names to fonts, and then trying to figure out if all the tools around the world see it in the same way as these guys see it.
It's never obvious.
No, it did. And okay, so I already mentioned features, and features is, I think, one of the key concepts of OpenType. And to put it a bit short, so to say, features, they're basically a collection of what I call manipulations, or potential manipulations, of the text tree. Not so much of the font, but of the text tree. So you have a text, there's something in the text, and the font has some information about what should happen if you want to render part of this text into something visible. These features use rules, or can use rules, not all of them do, but they can use rules that are laid down in the font. So there's additional information in the font that tells how to do certain things. At the previous bug that we have had talks about open type, so I don't need to explain all these details, but probably the presentation is probably somewhere online. So if you really want to know what's in there, you can find it. We have simple rules like replace this character, let's say a small a, by a small cat variant of this a. And then it will take another glyph from another slot and put it there. This is a simple rule. There can be more complex rules like if this character is followed by that character, replace it by yet another character. Just to give an example of letter mother, everybody knows the FI ligature, yeah? And in Dutch we also have an IG ligature. Now what happens if you have an FIG in sequence? What should take preference? Should it be the FI ligature or the IG ligature? This kind of things you can add information to the font, let's say, so add rules to a font that will make sure that you get, in this case, an F followed by an ID ligature, not an FI ligature followed by an G. But it took quite some effort to figure out the right way to do this. Now, two classes of features, some have to do with replacements, like I already mentioned, the other has to do with relative positioning. Some scripts need quite some additional positioning. Of course, the tech is the most famous positioning is kerning, kerning between characters. One can add features. Yeah, I think that the specification in that sense is indeed open. Actually, there are quite some features there that I think we can safely say fall in the more or less the same category. So if a rendering engine can deal with one, it can deal with all the others too. But what is practice? In practice, I think we're talking about a semi-open format. And that's why we at the end we can draw the conclusion that Arthur already mentioned. I think that understanding of open type is crippled by the lack of documentation. If you I'm not actively following these threads, but either occasionally pointing to these threads on type of file or whatever you see, sometimes people are arguing a lot about how you should read things or how things are supposed to be used. Well, for me, that's an indication that there's something wrong there. The standard is mostly controlled by a few large companies. That means Microsoft and Adobe. In this case, I'm not sure what Apple. Yeah, to some extent, Apple is also. It's what you can see if you look more closely to the standard is that it's closely related to how it's being used. First of all, you can use these fonts in word processors. Now, word processors are, in many cases, relatively stupid. Yeah? You key in a sequence of characters. Say that you are keying in error. And there's a certain way of inputting all these Unicodes there. But it should be rendered completely different from what you input. Now, if you have a word processor, it's no fun to add this kind of support if your main objective is to write a word processor, basically a text editor or a program editor or whatever. So in that case, it would be handy if you say, well, I just call out to the operating system or to a library or whatever. I use that font and it gives me back the right sequence of glyphs. So in that case, that I can understand that indeed if you add this kind of information to a font, it could be handy for a kind of neutral application to take it and to render something. When used in a desktop publishing, you have a completely different situation. In desktop publishing, these guys, they click and point and they choose from menus and they, well, this piece of text can have that font, this piece of text can have that font. It's a completely different approach to solving these visual issues. If you miss a character, you just select another font, you take this C character and finally it's there. You don't bother about how it ended up there. that's more a task for probably the printer who in the end has to make sure that it also gets printed. When using graphical user interfaces, for instance, you are writing this nice program and the program asks for, let's say, the name of the person, and you don't want at that moment to be involved in, as a programmer, to be involved in also making sure that what's key in it rendered in a nice way. So again, the fonts that are used then more or less drive what you get on the screen. So what we have there is, I would say, a set of conflicting demands. On one extreme, you have a situation where you say, okay, this font to tell my application everything it should do. And on the other hand, you have a situation where you say, I'm typing this document. I'm talking about the more traditional techies, yeah, who really like to tweak the document and influence all these details. They want to have some freedom. So if the font is pushing in a certain direction, or sometimes they don't want that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a very good example is, for instance, tracking and ligatures. If you add letter spacing between the letters, what should happen with the ligatures? Should they break at some point or should they not? Where is the threshold? And if I add 5% or 2%, should the ligature still be there? And if I add 7%, should it finally break or not?
Or should it be stretched line to work?
Yeah.
Then have a lot of stuff. Let's give an example. If we take a modern complete font set like Sap's new Novas, like Palatino Nova or whatever. Yeah. And there are regular shapes. Hmm? Yeah. Is something missing? Yes, yes.
Sounds like an H, not
it's an F, it should be. Yeah, okay. That's because I moved into the program to this state H, so I had to quickly make this. Otherwise you could have checked it. Okay. Regular shape, there are just regular shape. Yeah? The things that you normally expect from a font are there. I don't know the normal name for that. But there can be other things like small caps. Everybody probably knows what small caps is. Our lowercase characters are treated kind of special. There can be all time numerals, so the digits when they are rendered, visualized, can drop below the baseline. Some of them. It can be proportional or non-proportional variants. Say that you typeset in a table, then you don't want proportionally typeset numbers, but in other cases you might want them. It can be size variants. For instance, super subscripts can have in this big font that's sitting there. You can have special glyphs that deal with that kind of stuff. Now in a traditional text, you need for each of these, you need a font. And not, it's even worse. If you want to combine them, you basically get a multi-dimensional matrix of fonts that you need. So this can really explode into something, well, not funny. In OpenType, and that's the good thing, everything can be in one font. Yeah? And the features select what we do. How you integrate it in a macro package is yet another thing. Okay, now what does it mean in practice? One of the problems is that there's no way that you can control a font designer or a programmer, because I think much of this OpenType implementation stuff is kind of programmer-like thinking. We talk about adding rules and whatever. Nobody can force them to be complete. So you buy this font and you say, okay, I want small caps, but yeah, okay, small caps is the easy case, they're probably all there, but take old styles. And let the mother, we have an old style dollar. Yeah? I think there are a lot of fonts that don't have old style dollars. So if you can look completely naive to a font, you basically don't know what to expect there. And I don't think, but I may be mistaken, that it is somewhere a sort of checklist where a font designer can say, okay, if I want to make a proper open type font, this should be there. I think most of the fonts could just convert to type 1 fonts and then merge it. The future may show different things. But my experience so far is that you cannot really trust something to be present or not. Adam already mentioned an example. Another example is fractions. And I can show that. Well, there are several problems here, but if you look at this, this is basically the 1/2. In your input stream, you have 1/2, and the fract feature converts that or associates that with not the regular 1 and 2, but with a super and a subscript, or not so much a superscript, but a superscript and a lower one, and another kind of slash. But that's not necessarily true for another font. Yeah, other fonts can have, you can add this kind of stuff, but I would say that the spacing here is somewhat what messed up. Yeah? Just as you can see here, that is somehow not meant to be used if you do A/B. Now, techies normally switch fonts. They say, I want this document to be typeset with, what I say, let's call it feature, with this kind of feature. But if you apply this kind of feature to your document, you end up in trouble. I dare to say that the only features that you can safely apply are probably the features that you already use. Ligatures in many cases, and kerning, and all the other things can really depend on the circumstances where you use it. Now, let's go back to desktop publishing. Let's say a rendering application, so let's say a GUI or whatever will never use those features. Yeah? But in desktop publishing, you may. But then in desktop publishing, you can just select this piece, say, okay, for this piece I want to have the feature, and for another I don't want it. And that's a different approach. So I think that in practice, we will often not use that kind of features. Another thing is that, and that, okay, I may be naive in this respect, but I always thought, okay, OpenType is going to solve all these, at least these messy encoding problems. Yeah? Now, last week, my colleague came to me and said, well, there's a bug in tech, at least my variant of that, because I get the wrong accents. And we implement completely automated workflows. XML goes in, books comes out. Yeah? And so at the publisher, I said, oh, I see an error. These quotes are wrong. Yeah? I said, well, I cannot imagine that I made an error there, because if I made it, I'm sure that Moitza or whatever would jump up and say, Hans, there's an error in the encoding. It would have been noticed. Yeah? It's just that this font is bugged. Yeah? So, to come back to this, what I mentioned before is designers and programmers, whatever, there are no tools to verify fonts. I honestly think, you may correct me if I'm wrong, that quality assurance is one of the underdeveloped areas in font technology. And the same is true if you can say about whatever operating system you want, but all of them offer upgrading. Yeah? There's a bug and you can upgrade. Can I upgrade the font? Do font vendors offer a sort of mechanism where I can check if there's a new version of this font that is message fixed or not? No, I probably have to buy a new one. Hmm? Now this font is an...
That of course depends. I mean, depending on the vendor and on many vendors who offer bug fixes, depending on where you buy. I know that my font, for instance, actually has... If you buy a font from my font, then you get an automatic notification if there's an update. But it's really more like distributor-specific than vendor-specific.
Yeah.
I don't think that the vendors do it.
Because normally it's multi-layered. In any way, you design a new function, etc. Et but
and you're right, the quality assurance is very underdeveloped. There's mostly, to some extent, because of course fonts are very visual and there are many things that you can only spot by seeing, by there is no machine tests. But I mean, there are many machine tests you can perform.
This would be easy to visually check. You have a set of reference renderings of any character. Next to it, you have the other one. Say, okay, that's completely off. Now, the funny thing with this font, I was looking into this quote stuff. Now, what do you do? First thing is you try to look into the font. What happens? At first I think, is my application wrong? I did nothing wrong there. So, Park and I said, okay, let's look into the font. Now, if you look into the font, and I don't know if it's visible.
Left.
This is the glyph name as given in the font. And this is the official name. So what you see here, is that if you try to debug this problem, you get a completely messed up font factor, and we checked it in font editors and whatever. And so talk about quality assurance. I say, well, and believe me, this is not an exception. I have bought fonts from famous founders like or whatever. You know, Southern Brook fonts, yeah, and things in the wrong place, wrong name, whatever. No check of the end. You mail them and they say, yeah, we are aware of it, but you have to wait, blah blah, or you can buy, and then after half a year you get a nice mail say you can now buy an update for $500. Forget about it. And so now we are lucky that in this as you look at that CTEF flow, we don't need those names. Because they are basically taken from Unicode for the CID effect. So we are.
What's the name of the font? just to be sure not to buy it.
Serpentina. It's one of those fancy fonts that one of those fancy fonts that they like to see in. I'm not sure if I have them. These are test documents this is where it actually is used. So it's used as a font is used for headings and things like that. But this is probably one of the reasons why a lot of the books go completely unnoticed, because in headings you use an alphabet and that's it. Yeah? I to be honest, these are not my favorite fonts, but I have no say in that. That's what I mentioned before, or probably will mention later on. Okay. Many of the features are kind of generic. For instance, if you talk about ligature, there are several classes of ligatures: liga, dlig, rlig, whatever. They are basically the same. They use the same mechanism. If you can support one, you can support all. Now, I'm not that familiar with all the applications out there, but I get the impression that what kind of features are supported is not necessarily driven by what feature is in the font, but in many cases by what applications like to offer users as feature. Those things have to end up in menus and things like that. Another thing is that because we are basically talking about a kind of generic feature mechanism, with some exceptions. There are no rules about what ligatures should go in the liga feature. There are some customs. People can look at it and oh, he or she is doing it that way, so let's do it that way. So it also means that if you want to be very explicit in your documentation, I don't want the AE. Well, it's a ligature, the AE ligature. There's often a language dependency. Well, did they put it in or didn't they put it in? You cannot know in advance. No way. So, and there's often also not really, you can put in one of those special characters in between so that is not becoming legal. That is a bit awkward. So, the even for the familiar things, you don't know how they are supported. Some features make assumptions, like initials. So if you say I want to, this is especially important for languages like Arab, here we say that an initial character or a final character are really different. Then you run into the situation where you say, before I have to acquire the features, I need to analyze this document and determine which characters actually are initial characters. Now this is again something that has quite some border cases. In tech you can have things like boxes, you can put something in a box. Yeah? So what is your criterion to determine if something is an initial character? Is that the space before? We don't need that space in text, yeah? So if you really want to determine that, how do you look back, do you look forward, things like that, what's the neighboring of certain characters in order to determine these kinds of things? I think the rules for this are, again, not really well defined. So you need to know a language, and then you can from the language deduce some rules. Maybe you can hopefully. Yeah. Some features only work well in programs that support them. There are several rendering engines, and Microsoft, for instance, has a unified rendering engine, and Microsoft has a Vault program that you can use to add features to fonts, and the two of them work together somehow. You can add features that are supported in Unify, and I think the same is probably happening at the Adobe site and the Apple site. Where there are certain things that they support, and they put the features in there. It not necessarily means that another system or another vendor will do the same thing with those same features. Now, what does it mean if on the Microsoft site, in the specification, I read something like, in Unisquad we do this or this or that, yeah? When this feature is enabled, or even seem like, if this feature is enabled, do you also need to enable that feature, or is that supposed to be automatic? Is the user supposed to do that? That kind of, sometimes you don't have one feature, you have many features, yeah? What happens if I want properly type the error and I don't enable the initial feature? It is an assumption that they are all, actually, in that case, they could have put them all in one feature if they wanted. Sort of pseudo control. Well, this is already. Well, one aspect of this is, of course, that at some time I think that you will get the effect of, okay, let's say InDesign does it this way, so this is the way it should be. Or Unisquad does it that way. For instance, Mars is a good example. There's only one Mars font, real advanced Mars font around, and that is Cambria from Microsoft. So it probably means that in the TechGaia Mars project, we will just look at that font, how they did it. It's only a rendering engine that is for Microsoft that does something. And because Tech is in this respect didn't take the lead, they have to follow. Yeah? So you will get Microsoft Mars in the next version.
Which can be very convenient because there is just one example that basically the spec uses.
Yeah, well, you still have to kind of reverse engineer this bond, but yeah.
Well, there is a spec.
Yeah, there's a kind of spec, but in this case, if you talk about the math part, there's a bit of a tricky thing is that if you say I want to convert a certain sequence of Unicode into something math. Then you will basically test it to work a bit different. You say, now I'm in Mars, now I want to be this to be treated as in Mars. So maybe we need a little more, bit more formatting, but in general, I think the principles apply. What we find in our project is that normally a designer makes a style and we have to implement it, and well, he assumes that some features are there. You should use this or you should use that. And in the past, it was like, I opened up this new item, I set that values, and you have to use those values. That was used to be the case, and now you get things like, well, you have to use those features because I use them. But they forget that if they make this this nice demo document with, let's say, 90% Latin and a few funny headers, yeah, that they don't use any tricky characters, any marks, any anything. Yeah. So their features work, yeah, but not in the general case. I think that what you saw in the previous example, the 1/2, yeah, I know. The fraction, I think, is a good example of what I just called a dirty font. It is possible to come up with a set of rules that catches, let's say, most of the cases. Yeah? But they didn't do it. They just added a few features, a few rules for this specific feature, maybe because it was a good defending argument or whatever. But they could have done a better job. Now, the interesting thing there is that if everybody is going to make these perfect open type fonts with all the rules that are there, we probably end up with an enormous amount of redundancy. And this is one of the things that I'm somehow missing in those presentations. There are quite some things that are so generic that they could be shared among all fonts. There's not a concept of that. I have a library of rules that I can call it, and I can say, okay, for fractions, that would be a good example. Yeah? That you can have, okay, this is sort of base rule, and on top of that, I'm going to change it. That would have been a solution to that problem. So actually, eventually, instead of having many files, we have less files, but very big files, because all these rules.
Well, this is actually how OpenType does work to some extent, meaning that it's actually not that the whole intelligence is in the font. It's basically shared between the layout engine and the font, but in different proportions depending on what writing system there is, for instance, for
yeah.
Arabic or for Indic scripts.
Yeah, for the special script for one of
depending on what you call special. They're just as normal as Latin.
Yeah, but there are quite some things in OpenType, because if I'm implementing these random names, for instance, for Arab, I'm wondering why some of the stuff is in the font at all. Because if the things have proper names and whatever, and you have variants and whatever, you don't need all the other logic. You can just let everything do by the program, which is then more easy than trusting on one. There is, maybe you know, there's a project in the Netherlands, a project of a couple of designers who made contemporary Arab fonts.
Mm-hmm.
And I find them all, and they're all worked, and none of them works. I really wonder how they use themselves, probably by putting character after character in their program. Hmm? Well, actually, they use the same knowledge base, being Arab and how you combine things. And so that kind of common knowledge is somehow not yet maybe available. Fonts can have bugs. Well, we mentioned that already. There's another thing. Features can be specific for languages and scripts. Yeah. And interesting thing there is that, at least what I observe, is that you always find the same 5-6 languages being supported than the rest. I think even FRAC feature in Palantino is only supported for, five languages and a few script mentions. So I always wonder what should happen with the rest. Okay, you can use the defaults, but then you don't need those 5. Okay, I have to speed up a little bit. This is typically for techies. Techies, of course, eventually want to say, I have these features, and I want to tweak them a bit, and I want to change them a bit. But that's different. Okay, some conclusions. So are we better off? I think so. In general, you can say that OpenType, we are better off. We have less files, we have no encodings, we have much more glyphs available. We don't have this problem of who is there. And macro packages, from that perspective, can be made way less messy. The negative, one of the negative aspects, I think that the more a font drives the output, the less you can make real nice things. So that eventually should be way around that. The users, they used to be very knowledgeable about files, installing fonts, whatever, but now they need to be much more aware of what a font is, what features it provides, what's visually pleasing. Take all these people using Macintoshes in Economist, which the ST literature, because it looks so impressive. Yeah? while actually it's a traditional thing, it's only used in certain circumstances. So we need to shift, we need to educate the techies way more in terms of how to apply forms, how to choose forms, how to combine them, and how to select features. And to be honest, I think, and then I arrive with what already was concluded in the beginning, that OpenPy, in spite of its name, has nothing to do with an open standard or whatever. It's just a sort of hybrid between technologies that was already out there. And I think we have to look beyond that. If you create and define macro packaging or whatever, don't freeze yourself on features. Think about the generic thing or whatever. And then the last one. Dealing with fonts is only one aspect of that. Yeah. There's much more. Okay.
Thank you very much, Hans. Some comments, questions? Comments?
No more comments. Well, I basically agree. I mean, one, definitely, I do agree that OpenType is a very imperfect format. I wouldn't call it a standard, more like format, which is, you know, historically grown, and it already has a lot of redundancies and things that that should be removed. Some will be removed, some will be cleaned up. I have been actually hired by Microsoft to do some specification rewrites for the next class of 1.6 version of the specification, and but it's a messy situation. I agree, documentation wise. I don't think it will rapidly improve. Unfortunately, it will improve a bit, but not as well as everybody would wish.
Because there are already problems and forms.
Because there, and also there is a large inertia, and also the people inside of those organizations, they're very thinly stretched and small. But of course, neither Microsoft or Adobe in the very near future want to give the control of the format over to somebody else. But they can't really manage to do everything by themselves, because it's, you know, the font departments are like 3, 4, 5, 6 people there. And they've got a lot to do, and they usually push the documentation part to the very